from WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
What is up, beautiful people? You are now locked into WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. On this Monday, August 8th, 2016, we've got a great show in store for all of our listeners out there. As for us media members, this marks the very start of the Michigan State football year. That's right. Head coach of the Michigan State football team, Mark D'Antonio, will be addressing the various media members at Spartan Stadium at 2 p.m. So literally, right after we get off the air on today's show, I will be booking it, and I do mean booking it, to Spartan Stadium, which is right down the street here on the campus of Michigan State University, to hear what D'Antonio has to say concerning his squad. After he's done, of course, the offensive and special teams players will join the media members as well as the defensive players. So we'll have exclusive coverage. Well, I should say not exclusive. I mean, media members will be there through and thick and through. But we'll have coverage from Media Day on WKAR.org later on this afternoon. So you don't want to miss that. But on today's show, we will give you guys a preview of the Michigan State football year. Also, we'll recap what took place yesterday at Michigan's football media day. And a pretty big name in the world of baseball, Alex Rodriguez, will play his final game on Friday. We'll chat about that. Also, we hope that Mekhijah Reynolds, former Lansing Sexton Big Red football star, of course, he played for the Michigan State football team as well, trying to make his pro dreams come true in the NFL. We hope that Mekhijah Reynolds, we hope to have him on today's show. And on the back end of the show, we'll have an Olympic update, as the Olympics out in Rio de Janeiro have finally kicked off. So you don't want to miss that, and we will have weekend winners for you. So as you see, a jam-packed hour, so much to talk about, so little time. So let's start this party like we always do. Here are your Current Sports Quick Hit Headliners. All right, of course, folks, with all of the talk about the start of the college football year with media days for both Michigan State and Michigan underway, you cannot forget that today, actually at midnight, August 8th, 2016, it marks the very first day that high school football teams can get out on the gridiron and start preparing for their respective years, all right? And throughout this week, we hope to invite many coaches in the Mid-Michigan area that are looking forward to revving up the new football year, so you don't want to miss that. It's always a cool event because right at midnight, you see all of these teams, the whistle is blown, and you see all of these teams head out in the football field and go through the X's and O's as they prep for another year. So very cool stuff. Good to have football back. And as I mentioned, again, Michigan's Media Day was yesterday. Michigan State's Football Media Day will be taking place at 2 p.m. We will have coverage later on our website at WKAR.org. Don't miss any of it. All right, the Detroit Lions suffered a potentially devastating injury in their annual mock game when third-year tight end Eric Ebron had to be carted off the field with a lower right leg injury. Now, Ebron spent several minutes on the ground clutching the back of his right leg, ankle, slash Achilles area before a cart came to take him to the locker room. Lions head football coach Jim Caldwell talked to reporters before the game, declined to comment about Ebron's injury after practice. Ebron was blocking on a red zone running play when he was hurt midway through the fourth quarter of a simulated scrimmage that did not include tackling. Now, the Lions, who played their first team offense against their second and third team defensive units most of the day, moved the drive to the other side of Ford Field while trainers tended to Ebron. Thanks to a base running blunder and a bad break on the play that precluded a game-winning home run allowed by Detroit Tigers pitcher Francisco Rodriguez, the Detroit Tigers fell to the New York Mets 3-1 yesterday. In the loss, the Tigers squandered right-handed pitcher Anibal Sanchez's best start of the year. Sanchez threw 8 outstanding innings, allowing 1 run and 4 hits. He struck out 10 batters, reaching a double-digit total for the second time this season, and 13th in his career. But the bad break in the eighth and Rodriguez's fifth homer allowed this season weren't enough to end a good homestand on a great note. The Tigers did, however, finish their homestand 7-2 and got themselves back into playoff contention. The New York Yankees announced this weekend that A-Rod, that's right, Alex Rodriguez's last game with the team will be this Friday. He will stay with the Yanks and become a special advisor and instructor with the team. 41-year-old designated hitter, a three-time American League MVP and 14-time All-Star, is hitting .204 this year with 9 homers and 29 RBIs in 216 at-bats. His slump relegated him to the bench for the most part of this past month, with Rodriguez getting only 1 start and 7 at-bats in 14 games since July 22nd. He does have a $20 million salary this year and is owed $20 million more in 2017, the final of that crazy 10-year, $275 million contract that was baseball's largest at the time when he signed on the dotted line. How about this story? Golfer Jim Furyk shot the lowest ever PGA Tour round on Sunday, finishing with a 58 in the final round of the Travelers Championship at TPC River Highlands Course in Connecticut. Furyk also set a course record on the opening 9 holes, reaching the turn in just 27 shots. That's just like a video game, folks. That score tied the 46-year-old American for the second best 9 holes in PGA Tour history. Corey Pavin shot 26 on the front 9 at U.S. Bank Championship in Milwaukee, if you remember, back in 2006. Furyk had this to say: "There's a lot of rounds by a lot of great players ahead of me that have never reached 58. So to hold that record alone right now on the PGA Tour, at least, is phenomenal. To have a little small piece in history is something you dream of," end quote. Despite some athletes being allowed to compete at the Rio de Janeiro Olympics, Russia was kicked out of the upcoming Paralympics on Sunday as the punishment for the state running of a doping operation. "The facts really do hurt," end quote. That's from IPC President Philip Craven. The Paralympic movement is anticipating further evidence of positive tests being covered up that McLaren did not uncover in his initial 76-day investigation. The IPC said it has evidence of manipulated doping tests relating to 44 athletes, including 27 from samples from competitors in 8 sports that are a part of the Paralympic program. Michael Phelps, Caleb Dressel, Ryan Held, and Nathan Adrian. Also want to make this note, they earned the gold in the 4x100 freestyle relay on Sunday night. Phelps earned his 23rd overall medal and his 19th gold. That is sick. And if you catch that race last night around 10:50 p.m., it was one for the books. And last but certainly not least, sad news from the racing world. Noblesville native and race car driver Brian Clausen has passed away after a very serious racing crash on Saturday. Clausen is considered the nation's top short track dirt car driver. He has won 4 USAC national championships and was participating in his 116th race of the year. Now, Clausen was a 3-time winner and defending champion at Belleville. He flipped off the guardrail between turns 3 and 4 while leading. His car rolled several times and was hit by another car. It was his second wreck of the weekend. Brian Clausen, gone far too soon. Those are your current sports quick hit headliners. Call in to be a part of today's show. You know that number, 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. You can also go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports, or even tweet me at AlMartinWKAR or at our official Current Sports Twitter page at WKAR_sports. Time to start the show. Thank you.
This is a tough day. I love this game, and I love this team. And today, I'm saying goodbye to both. I never thought I can play for 22 years. At 18, I just wanted to make the team. I want to thank the Steinbrenner family for giving me this opportunity and for making me part of this team and for giving me an opportunity to stay involved by mentoring the next generation of Yankees.
Yes, and that is how we start this afternoon's Current Sports. Welcome, welcome, welcome to the show. I trust that all of you out there had a marvelous weekend. It was a great one, folks. Sun was shining, the birds were chirping, the sky was blue. Oh, the grass is green. Just a great weekend. I really hope you had a good one out there. I know I did. And a big weekend in the world of sports. You just heard from Mr. Alex Rodriguez, who had an interesting baseball career, to say the least. I want to dive into A-Rod announcing that he will be retiring from the game of baseball in just a second. But before I do that, a quick note that wasn't included in our headliners. Michigan's 2017 football class received a huge addition today. Quick update that James Hudson III, a strong side defensive end from Toledo Catholic Central, announced his commitment to the Wolverines on Periscope. U of M and Michigan State had been pursuing him the hardest. He's a three-star prospect ranked as the number 15 player in Ohio and number 13 defensive end by 247 Sports. Hudson is 6 feet five, 280 pounds. So James Hudson III will be a Wolverine. How about that? And also, again, I want to take a note of the Hall of Fame, the Pro Football Hall of Fame that also took place this past weekend as big names like Brett Favre. I mean, how cool was his speech, right? No notes. Just, you know, speaking from the heart. Of course, I'm sure he had bullet points as the speech went along, but it was a little over 30 minutes. And just speaking from the heart about his remarkable NFL career. And hey, how about Michigan's own Tony Dungy, the very first African-American head coach to win a Super Bowl? Dungy was also enshrined into the hall. Very cool, because while watching Tony when he was up there on the podium, I was present as a reporter for WLNS TV6. I was present as Dungy went into the Michigan Sports Hall of Fame not too long ago. So Tony Dungy, just a remarkable human being who paved the way for many African-American coaches in the NFL and beyond today. So you get to hear from Favre and Dungy later on in the hour. But again, going back to A-Rod now, folks, because, you know, this is news that I was surprised that it came around this past weekend. I wasn't surprised at all that A-Rod has decided to move away from the game. I mean, we're talking about a guy who's in his 40s now, and his production has totally gone down to the point where he has been benched by the New York Yankees, and that Yankees organization is going through a period of transition right now. I mean, they sold at the trade deadline last week, and this is a team that is going to be very young moving forward now. They will be in a period of rebuilding. And now you have a big name like Alex Rodriguez, who has decided that, hey, I'm going to do something else now. Playing the game of baseball is no longer my forte. And, you know, he's had a crazy career when you look at it. I mean, this is a guy who was the number one pick of the 1993 MLB draft, went, of course, to the Seattle Mariners, and was a fantastic young stud. He made his debut. He was drafted in 1993 as a 17-year-old, but he made his major league debut at the age of 18. And by 20, that's when he had made his very first all-star team and went second in the American League MVP race. I mean, he was a great young player. And you saw potential for A-Rod to go down as one of the greatest. And I think early on in his career, I mean, you had many people already saying that this would be a guy who is a shoe-in for Cooperstown to make the Hall of Fame, all right? Without a doubt, he went to the Texas Rangers for a 10-year, as I mentioned, that 10-year, $252 million contract. When it started, again, you know, when he signed on the dotted line, it was the richest in American sports. We're not just talking about baseball here, but it was, at the time, the richest contract in any major sport. We're talking, you know, football, we're talking basketball, of course, in the game of baseball and beyond, all right? It was just crazy, and the NHL included as well. So he goes to the Texas Rangers on that 10-year, $252 million deal. And I want to take note of that because as his career went along, of course, we all know what happened. The whole PED scandal came out. And it was ugly, folks. At first, you didn't have A-Rod coming out and saying, yep, you got me. He started slanging dirt. You know, he started blaming everyone except himself at the end of the day. Instead of owning up to it, you know, saying, hey, you got me. Yeah, I did it. At first, his very first initial reaction was to start blaming it and blaming everybody else. All right. It was the Lance Armstrong sort of syndrome. All right. And, you know, it was found that, you know, again, at 33 years old, he was found to have been using PEDs, and his rep took a huge hit, huge hit. And as you start unfolding the timeline of events for A-Rod, he talked about at the time when he signed that 10-year, $252 million deal, he felt so much pressure to live up to the richest contract in American sports history that he felt the need. He had an obligation to make sure that he performed up to that contract, so much so that it pushed him to use performance enhancing drugs, which is a load of crap when you evaluate that statement at the end of the day. And then, you know, at 37 years old, the whole Biogenesis scandal came up. And again, he lied time and time again. He not only lied, but he started to sue. I mean, it got really ugly during that time. And then what happens? A year-long suspension. A year-long ban from the game of baseball. And really, after that, no one looked at A-Rod the same. Nobody. So, and what's remarkable, though, is after he has that year-long ban from baseball, he comes back at 39 years old and does something that many 39-year-old players can't do, and that's go out there and be relatively productive, you know, at bat. He had 33 homers at the age of 39. That's remarkable, absolutely remarkable. And it only makes me think that if A-Rod went steroid-free, did not use any performance-enhancing drugs throughout his career, just how great he would have been. I think he would have been a pretty good player, and I think he would have been a Hall of Famer. But now with the ugliness later on in his career, you know, with the lies and the deceit, there's no way that you can put Alex Rodriguez into the Hall of Fame. And I think that's the consensus among everybody out there. He was a great player, but the fact that he used performance-enhancing drugs and the fact that he tried to lie about it and the fact that he tried to sue, he's just not a Hall of Fame guy. Simple as that. And that will keep many baseball players out of the Hall of Fame because they felt the need to use performance-enhancing drugs. So I want to know, what's your thought about Alex Rodriguez hanging it up, calling it a career, and what do you think people should remember A-Rod for, you know? Because I think that when it's all said and done, he would be looked at as a fantastic player, one of the best to ever do it. But a player that had to go that route of many in the game of baseball, go the route of cheating and using performance-enhancing drugs, and that is what's going to keep him out of the Hall of Fame. And he was very emotional. You heard his press conference. Very emotional because, you know, the game has in many ways been his safe haven away from all of the nastiness that has taken place. And, you know, now I applaud the Yankees because they're going to put him in another role as being an advisor with the team. And A-Rod is a guy, I mean, when you listen to A-Rod talk, I mean, he's a guy who can be very good in the media, I think. Now, I think we could see A-Rod later on in his career taking that route. You know, you may see him on a national network analyzing the game. I think he'll be very, very good at that. So we'll see what happens. This isn't the last we've heard of Alex Rodriguez at all. Call in, folks. 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. Also, you know, I want to bring up, of course, some college football talk before we hit our first break here. Michigan had its media day yesterday out in Ann Arbor. Pretty cool event. I saw the pictures, and everybody, of course, is donning the Jumpman maize and blue jerseys and are ready for the upcoming Michigan football season. And Michigan State's media day will be taking place in a little more than 30 minutes now as Mark D'Antonio will address the media at 2 p.m. at Spartan Stadium. And then you'll have the offensive and special teams players come out and then the defensive players come out. So this marks the unofficial start for us media members when it comes to the college football year. I'm really looking forward to it. Really looking forward to it. Now, when it comes to U of M, and a few takeaways from the Michigan Media Day talk. Of course, at the very forefront of the talk for this team is who's going to be the quarterback? And it's the same question that Michigan State will try to answer time after time after time later on this afternoon. The answer, I think we all know what the answer is. It's going to be an open competition for both the Wolverines and the Spartans, all right? Jim Harbaugh addressed it and said that, hey, it's a clean slate in the quarterback race, you know, and two of the big names that were primarily talked about were, of course, Wilton Spate and Mr. John O'Korn, you know, the two who emerged as the most consistent players out of spring camp. It's going to be an open slate for both O'Korn and Spate to go out there and try and woo the Michigan football team as well as the coaching staff as the number one guy before they take the field against Hawaii. So that's the obvious question throughout training camp leading up to that first game for Michigan. You know, it's going to be interesting because for Michigan, again, offensively, I think they're going to be relatively okay. Well, with the exception of the you know, again, big question in the quarterback. They got to get better when it comes to the offensive line. I think that's the same question for Michigan State as well. You got to protect the quarterback. I think Michigan has questions when it comes to his offensive line as well. So those are two big question marks, without a doubt. But I think Michigan's defense is going to be solid. If there's one thing that I'm not worried about for the Michigan football team, it's going to be on the defensive side of the football. And it's been said that Jabril Peppers, who right now is already in the talk for Big Ten Player of the Year. Jabril Peppers is going to make a move from CB, from cornerback, to linebacker for the Michigan football team next season. And that'd be an interesting move. I think Jabril Peppers is a guy who's so smart on the field, whose game transcends because he's not only smart, but he's so athletic as well that you can put him anywhere. You can put him at cornerback. You can put him at linebacker. You can put him at safety. He is going to give you great production. So I actually like that move, you know, and I think it will allow Peppers to shine. Not that he's going to shine. Not that he wouldn't shine if he was playing the cornerback position like he did last year. But the linebacker position is a position where you have to really cover the field, and you have to know everything. And Jabril Peppers is a guy who will naturally fill that role. So he's going to be a dynamic rusher from that spot. I think you can see a lot of sacks from Mr. Jabril Peppers in that position. And also, a question mark for me, other than the offensive woes at quarterback and offensive line, special teams. Michigan had one of the top special teams units for much of last season under assistant John Baxter. Baxter is at USC now, and assistant Chris Partridge now takes over. Kenny Allen is back as the kicker, but who will punt? That's a question mark to look for as well. The return game, you've heard Pepper's name thrown out a lot when it comes to that. And, you know, it was centered around Peppers for much of last year. And then he surrendered some of the duties late in the year to Mr. Jordan Lewis. So can those two, I think, are going to really hold it down for Michigan in the return spot. The only thing is, and I'm worried about with those two big names holding that position, is injury. A lot of bodies flying at you in the return game. They have to stay healthy. Peppers and Lewis are going to have to stay healthy in that position. So those were my takeaways. You know, not much from Media Day. I mean, what you hear a lot in Media Day is a lot of what you heard during Big Ten Media Days. It was a lot of the same repetitive talk, you know. And so there was nothing new that I gained pretty much from what I read from Michigan Media Day. I'm just ready. You know, you get to a point where you just hear all this talk left and right and the same conversations happen over and over again. You just want to see these guys play. Now, what I will say, you know, after further review, I think that this Michigan team that went 10-3 last year, 6-2 in the Big Ten East under first-year head coach Jim Harbaugh, you know, when you evaluate things, and I've heard this dialogue happen multiple times, Michigan's schedule, They don't really get tested until like the later, the back end of their schedule. And I'm wondering, you know, and I see right here, this just flashed on my phone. You have all of these preseason polls come out and all these preseason projections, right? I'm trying to bring it up now, but there's an expert, quote unquote expert from ESPN, who has come out with his predictions for the upcoming college football year. And I'm trying to bring up his name here. Oh, here it is. Mark Schlambach. He has made his 2016 predictions for the upcoming college football playoff. And he does have Michigan making it and winning at Ohio State on November 26th to close out the year. And that's the big thing. Again, Michigan doesn't get tested until the later end of the schedule. And they have to play both Michigan State and Ohio State on the road. They play Michigan State on October 29th at Spartan Stadium and Ohio State on November 26th to close out the year, to close out the regular season at Ohio Stadium in the final game of the year. But there are many people that are buying the Jim Harbaugh hype. And I get it. You know, Jim Harbaugh's name has been said time and time again all throughout the summer due to the satellite camp talk. And, you know, you look at what they have coming back on the defensive end. There's, again, the question marks I brought up when it comes to the quarterback and the offensive line. But, you know, more so of what people are really buying into is that Jim Harbaugh has created a great system at Michigan already. Again, he went 10-3 in his first year. That's pretty good. Pretty good. People are buying into the Jim Harbaugh philosophy. And that's hard work, dedication, and that will transpire to wins. I'm not sure if I'm buying it yet, just because of the whole quarterback question mark. I still think that Ohio State is the favorite and should be the favorite. Should be the favorite going into this Big Ten East season. Simple as that. That's just my opinion. I want to know yours. 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. Before we hit our first break, I want to invite the man behind the glass, our fantastic engineer of WKAR's Current Sports, Mr. Isaac Constance. Isaac, how you doing, my man?
Doing well, yeah. Ready for Media Day, all dressed up. Not actually that dressed up because I got to ride my bike over, but even so, you know, trying my best. But I find Media Day always entertaining. Gives you a few good quotables and things like that. But at the same time, it's very superficial. It's very cosmetic. All of it, no coach in the entire United States. It's going to say, you want to hear our game plan for the first game? You want to hear a decisive definition of who our starting quarterback is? Nobody's saying that. All it is just pandering to the crowd. It's of mutual benefit because the media members like us get a few quotes, a few storylines, and the programs get more exposure. But honestly, Media Days, and Michigan's was very much like this as well. They're just a celebration of the program. There's not too much going on.
Yeah, and you know, a lot, again, I go back to this because Big Ten Media Days was not far removed from today's day. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
A lot of what you will hear from the Michigan State players and coaching staff is a lot of what we already heard out in Chicago. Simple as that. So, it makes it a challenge for us media members to sort of look at it from a different angle and nitpick at different storylines. So I spent about an hour last night trying to think of, okay, what other way can I go at this on Monday afternoon, you know? So we hope to bring some different quotes during this afternoon's coverage. So don't miss it. We'll have it at WKAR.org. And Isaac, of course, you don't have to ride your bike. Just ride with me, my man.
I got you.
We'll be booking it right after we get off the air at 2 p.m., all right? Let's hit our first break. When we come back, we hope to invite Mekijah Reynolds, former Lansing Sexton Big Red, who had a pretty good Michigan State football career playing on that defensive line. Mekijah Reynolds, we hope to have him on the line when we get back. You are listening to WKAR's Current Sports. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. Please call in to be a part of our airwaves. If something is on your sports noggin, you know that number, 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. You can also go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports, or you can tweet us at my Twitter handle of Al Martin, WKAR, or at WKAR_sports. What a weekend it was. It was a jam-packed weekend. I spent much of my day yesterday watching the Olympic coverage out in Rio de Janeiro, and we'll have an Olympic update for you later on this hour. You don't want to miss that. But the Pro Football Hall of Fame, which took place, the induction ceremony took place on Saturday, and it was a great class that included Brett Favre, who I grew up watching. Actually, my very first NFL jersey that I got for Christmas was of Brett Favre when he was balling out for, of course, the Green Bay Packers. I cherish that jersey. I still have it, actually. I had a Brett Favre jersey and also a John Elway jersey of the Denver Broncos. I was a huge fan of both Favre and John Elway. And, you know, talking about John Elway in the Terrell Davis days, I mean, oh, my goodness, it takes me back. Certainly takes me back. So it was very cool to watch Brett Favre up there as he gave his 36-minute speech. And, you know, he got choked up a few times, especially when he talked about what his father meant to his football career. That was cool. And also, the first African-American head football coach to ever win a Super Bowl was inducted into the Hall of Fame as well. Mr. Tony Dungy from Jackson, Michigan. That's right. He's from right. And a lot of people don't even. It's shocking how you know, I tell people that, and they're like, oh my gosh, I didn't know that. Yeah, he's from mid-Michigan, right from Jackson, folks. Mr. Tony Dungy, he was inducted, as I talked about, into the Michigan Sports Hall of Fame not too long ago. That was a great class as well. I mean, you had Tony Dungy, you had Mateen Cleaves, you had Steve Smith. It was very cool being down there and watching that ceremony. But, you know, Tony Dungy is a guy who really just exudes class. I mean, just a classy guy, one of the nicest guys you'll ever meet. And he knew the game of football, folks. So really briefly here, I want to play a snippet from the Hall of Fame induction ceremony, which took place, of course, out in Canton, Ohio this past weekend. You'll get to hear from Dungy and Favre right now.
It was a small group of men, just 10 of them, if you can believe that, 10 African-American assistant coaches in the entire NFL. Many of them never got the chance to move up the coaching ladder like I did, but they were so important to the progress of this league. and I'll always be grateful to the National Football League for giving me my life's work. Thank you, and God bless.
My mother-in-law, who for 33, 34 years has been by far my biggest fan, I have never thrown an interception that has been my fault, according to my mother-in-law, Ann. And I overheard my father talking to the three other coaches and heard him, and I assume I didn't play as well the previous week only because of what he said. And he said, I can assure you one thing about my son. He will play better. He will redeem himself. I know my son. He has it in him. And I never let him know that I heard that. I never said that to anyone else. But I thought to myself, that's a pretty good compliment, you know. My chest kind of swole up. And I never told anyone. But I never forgot that statement, and that comment that he made to those other coaches. And I want you to know, Dad, I spent the rest of my career trying to redeem myself. I'm working on it. I'm trying to get through it. But I spent the rest of my career trying to redeem myself and make him proud. And I hope I succeeded.
Yes, he certainly did. Again, that was the voice of Brett Favre as well as Tony Dungy at the Pro Football Hall of Fame induction ceremony. You know, it's interesting because, you know, looking at the careers of both Favre and Dungy, you know, I've heard a few arguments that have been made over the weekend. And, you know, one I want to bring up before I get into my spiel about Dungy, and I want to know if you agree with this, Isaac, but I saw a snippet from, this is The Herd. You know, Kyle, we've been talking about Colin Cowherd way too much in the past 2 weeks here on the show. But
it's
anyway.
Newsmaker, yeah.
Exactly, right? But Colin Cowherd, you know, he, on his radio show, they have an individual by the name of Nick Wright, who also is on, who makes regular appearances on The Herd. And Nick Wright had a very interesting point that if Brett Favre made it to the Hall of Fame, Terrell Owens should have made it into the Hall of Fame as a first ballot Hall of Famer. And I'm like, you know, when I first saw the headline, before I clicked on the snippet, I'm sitting there saying no. I don't know about that statement. But Nick goes on to really break it down. And when you look at the resumes for their positions and comparing Favre to Owens, you can make a very solid argument that Owens had more accomplishments at his respective position, more so than Brett Favre. You know, you look at Terrell Owens. I mean, he was a 5-time first-team All-Pro. Brett Favre, 3-time first-team All-Pro. Brett Favre was a member of the 1990s All-Decade Team. Terrell Owens was a member of the 2000s All-Decade Team. Terrell Owens, second in all-time reception yards. Brett Favre, second all-time in pass yards. Terrell Owens, third all-time in reception touchdowns. Brett Favre, second all-time in pass touchdowns. And then he brought up this question, which I really stood out in my mind. When you evaluate the career of Brett Favre, there are at least 5 more quarterbacks that you can bring up that had a better career than Brett Favre. At least 5. I mean, you can even, if you wanted to, you can even go to 7, 8, maybe even 10, to be honest with you. Terrell Owens, when you evaluate his resume, there's only, probably 2 wide receivers.
Randy Moss
and
Jerry,
of course,
Rice.
And what I think is the greatest football player of all time, and Jerry Rice.
Untouchable.
You know what I mean? There's only 2 that you can bring up that had a better career than Mr. Terrell Owens. So it made me really, you know, stand back and really think about it and say, wow, I mean, why is that so? And there's really only one reason here, Isaac. And that is Terrell Owens, his mouthpiece at the end of the day. I mean, Terrell Owens was a guy who was phenomenal on the football field. Absolutely phenomenal. But his off-the-field antics were so brash that it took away and diluted what he did on the gridiron. Simple as that. I mean, we can go back to the push-ups in the driveway. And we can go back to the trash talking that went a bit excessive and a bit personal countless times in relation to his quarterbacks. You know what I mean? I mean, you go on and on here with this conversation. They were so in your face and a bit stomach turning that it took away from the overall perception that we should have had throughout most of his football career on the field. Brett Favre wasn't a schoolboy either, though. And this is also a point that was brought up. I mean, Brett Favre with the whole texting scandal when, as he sent a Draymond Green text to a young lady who worked with the team, and that really hurt his marriage a little bit. But to be honest, that wasn't blown up like Terrell Owens' off-the-field antics. You know what I mean? So it makes you wonder, you know, if Terrell Owens just toned it down a bit when it came to, you know, really just – he was just being himself, to be honest with you. But if he toned it down a bit, whether or not Terrell Owens would have been a first-ballot Hall of Famer. Because when you look at his resume, Isaac, I think Terrell Owens should have been a first-ballot Hall of Famer.
I don't think that's a question. I think that it's different when you're talking about quarterback and receivers. Because quarterbacks, you can say, well, Dan Marino was one of the greatest all times, but where is his Super Bowl? It's a great question, too. You can not answer that question. For me, it's actually Tom Brady who takes the cake as the GOAT at the quarterback position. But then you can make the Joe Montana debate as well. You can talk about Steve Young. You can talk about John Elway. Heck, you can talk about Brett Favre with the longevity of his career. And he was effective even when he was on the Minnesota Vikings following his first retirement. But with the receivers, it's set in stone. Mm-hmm. There is no debating the fact that Jerry Rice is number one. In my opinion, you can't really argue that Randy Moss is number two, and you can't really argue that T.O. is number three. I think if T.O. had turned it down whatsoever, he's first ballot. I think he still should have been first ballot, because as much as his antics might have painted a picture of the league, which they weren't so fond of, they weren't that corrosive to society. It's not as if he went on a whole O.J. Simpson.
Well, the thing
case.
Is, it was corrosive to the locker room.
It was.
And that's it's so toxic when you interfere with team chemistry.
Well,
because
that's
team
why
chemistry is huge.
Exactly. Team after team.
And that's the reason why writers, you know, didn't vote him as a first ballot Hall of Famer. Simple
well,
as
true.
That. He was so corrosive in the locker room. I mean, getting into it with your quarterback, who, again, is, in my opinion, the most important position out there on the football field. He's the guy who really pays your bills. I mean, throwing the football to you, and you go out there and put them on blast left and right. I mean, the whole Donovan McNabb and T.O. relationship is one that has constantly been talked about and marred. So it's really crazy, and you have to entertain that conversation. Folks, what do you think about what took place this past weekend out in Canton, Ohio at the 2016 Pro Football Hall of Fame ceremony? 517-355-9527. Before I go on my rant about Tony Dungy, let's get to a caller right now. We have on line one. It's our dear friend Ray from Indiana. Ray, welcome to the show.
Hey, you see how they put that paint down on that field? That David Bakers, what a joke that guy is. He says we have integrity. If they had any integrity, Kurt Warner would have been a first ballot Hall of Famer. You know, nobody's never been a two-time MVP of the league and not got in after the first ballot. He's waiting on his third ballot. He's got the three top passing records in 50 Super Bowls. He's got the number two ranking next to Bart Starr, that won 8 world championships back in the 60s. The history of the game, my friend, took the St. Louis Rams and Arizona Cardinals, two of the worst franchises in history, took him to 3 Super Bowls. He was 1-2, but he got him to lead in all 3 games. He couldn't play defense, too, when they blew it in the last minute or two.
I knew a rant was coming about Kurt Warner after this past weekend, Ray. I'm pretty sure you were watching the Hall of Fame ceremony saying, that should be Kurt Warner.
Well, you know, Brett Favre, I was against him for his lying and everything, but I'm going to give him some credit. He got up there and joked for a minute, and he said, I want to thank Jesus Christ for my personal Savior.
It was a great speech. I thought Brett Favre gave my favorite speech at the Hall of Fame.
I got a lot more liking him after his speech.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was great. And then you know you talk about a guy like Tony Dungy, who Tony Dungy
had a great speech.
Oh, he was fantastic as well. And you talk about a guy who's really grounded in faith. Tony Dungy has always been like that, Ray.
The only problem I had with him not putting Kurt Warner, and he got cut the last place, he should have gotten in over Marvin Harrison. Marvin Harrison had some real problems up here. He was up for murder just 5-6 years ago. He got off somehow. I don't know how he did it, but then that drunken owner of his got him into Hall of Fame along with Tony Dungy. I don't have a problem with Tony Dungy because he's a great godly man, but I have a problem with Marvin Harrison getting in over Kurt Warner.
Well, and this is the thing, because what you just brought up is a conversation that you hear a lot as well. And that concerns, when it comes to the Hall of Fame, or any Hall of Fame for that matter, should it be based on just what you did, were able to do throughout your athletic career? Or how much should people pay attention to your character, your moral character away from the field? Because now you get to this conversation. I mean, you can have a guy who broke all of these records, who won Super Bowls left and right, who was first team throughout most of their career, but who was just a complete idiot away from the game. Do you put him in? That's the question.
Hey,
I mean, where do you draw that line?
I got a question for you. Who would you like to talk to? Kurt Warner to build $2 million things for retarded children? Or O.J. Simpson in jail for murder, but he got off on the murder crimes he had for other crimes?
So my question to you, Ray, is, I mean, how much should the voters look into a person's career away from the game?
Well, let's put it this way. Roger Goodell, if you get caught with marijuana, cocaine, or heroin, or all that other crap, or beating women up or whatever, you're going to get a penalty. They don't give them any penalty. They still put them in the Hall of Fame. They say they don't go by character, but they're putting in some of the shadiest people you ever seen in your life. But they won't put in somebody that does nice things for people in Jesus.
Ray, thanks a lot for the call. Appreciate that.
Thank you, buddy.
I'm one who falls on the end that character should be one of the pillars that you look at when evaluating someone's career. It varies. It's a case-by-case basis. I mean, a guy who goes out there, domestic violence, for instance, is a big conversation within the game of football. You see so many football players get in trouble, you know, when it comes to domestic abuse with their respective girlfriends or wives. That should be taken into account when you talk about what is a Hall of Fame guy. You know what I mean? That defines who a Hall of Famer is in my definition as well, Isaac. But at the same time, you also have to look at what they did in their career, because, again, these are the Football Hall of Fame, the foundation of it is who you were as either a coach or a player out there. And that is the prime component to what makes a guy a Hall of Famer.
Well, for me, I try to nuance it a little bit and just make sure that there's a definite standard. Because for me, it all comes down to what reputation, what image did you paint of the game? And what did you do which would have really deteriorated the perception of that in more than a just cosmetic, superficial way? Mm-hmm. Because for me, yeah, somebody like O.J. Simpson, that's definitely deeming of him maybe being removed from the Hall of Fame, something like that. I think what he did after the game, that's fair if you want to say throw him out. However, if you say something like Terrell Owens, somebody who is a loudmouth, somebody who got into it with reporters, got into it with his quarterbacks, whatever, he's hurting his own perception. He's not really doing anything off the field, though, that's legitimately hurting anybody, harming anybody outside of within the game's boundaries itself.
He's not breaking any laws.
Exactly.
That's what it is. When it comes to laws in society, he's not arrested for anything.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah, I hear
so
what you mean.
So that's why I throw in Terrell Owens into a different category. I say throw him in the first time. I say Brett Favre also. That's kind of a double standard if you're not going to punish him for the off-the-field things, but you are Terrell Owens. And I think the character thing can only be a compliment, but I don't think that it has to be on equal footing as play on the field or contributions on the field to the game. Because I think Tony Dungy, he was benefited by having a great personality off the field. I remember admiring him as a kid. He was one of my role models because he never cursed. He never cursed to his players outside of the word damn, which he said once. Mm-hmm. I remember him telling this story. He never cursed ever in the locker room. That is so respectable in a game which is marred by incivility in many different locker room type actions. It's not a big deal, but it's the nature of the game. So for Tony Dungy to stand up, be the man he was, it was great to see. That benefits him. But yeah, a coach who doesn't do that, he shouldn't be punished for that.
Yeah, and I also think that there are other coaches that you can bring up that had that aren't in the Hall of Fame right now who have right now a better coaching resume than Tony Dungy.
Certainly.
But at the same time, Tony Dungy benefited a lot from not only being a good person, but being the very first African-American to win a Super Bowl. That breaking down barriers. I mean, I equate in a way, not to the extremist extent of, but in a way to what Jackie Robinson did for the game of baseball. I mean, Tony Dungy becoming the very first black Super Bowl winning head coach broke down a lot of barriers and opened a lot of doors for other African-American coaches to get jobs and to get that opportunity to become the head coach of an NFL team. You know, and look at the coaching tree for Tony Dungy. It includes guys like Lovie Smith, guys like Mike Tomlin. I could go on and on and on. I mean, he broke down so many barriers, and that also aided in him, you know, gracing that stage in Canton, Ohio as well. So our second break. When we come back, we will put a bow on today's current sports by giving you an Olympic update. Also, Weekend Winners is also on tap, folks. Don't miss it. We'll be right back. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I'm your host, Al Martin, and you never know what's going to happen on live radio, folks. I just got Mekhijah Reynolds is right now. He's training, and I believe he's in Montreal in Canada right now. And, you know, we couldn't get him at 12:30. He said he tried calling back. We couldn't get him, so we are going to try and get Kaj on the show tomorrow. That's how it happens sometimes, folks. Kaj, we hope to have him on Current Sports tomorrow. So, sorry for that, folks. Hey, it happens. Live radio, anything can happen. All right. Well, the Olympics are taking place out in Rio de Janeiro, and the opening weekend for the Olympics took place this past weekend. The opening ceremony was Friday night. It was a 3-hour long, just, you know, there were points where I was really interested, but then, you know, you have this hour and a half long introduction of every single country, and I admit I did fall asleep. All right, it was just a little bit too long for me. But it's an extravaganza nonetheless. And hey, the games started on Saturday and Sunday, and they will proceed the rest of this month. So looking forward to it. So if you missed anything that took place this past weekend, we will now invite our very own Seth Kinker to give us all an Olympic update.
United States swim team brought home hardware yesterday night at the Rio Olympics. Katie Ledecky, the most dominant female swimmer in Rio, demolished her own record in the 400-meter freestyle with a time of 3 minutes and 56.46 seconds. She beat her nearest competitor by almost 5 seconds on her way to the gold. Like we heard in the quick hit headliners, Michael Phelps got his 19th gold in the 4x100-meter relay team, and he might not be done. Today, swims in the preliminaries and possibly the semifinals in the 200-meter butterfly, which is his signature event. He's owned that world record in the 200 fly since 2001. As of yesterday night, the United States currently sat in the lead with the medal count with 12 total medals, 3 golds, 5 silvers, and 4 bronzes, followed by Italy and China with 8 medals each. In fencing, Ibaraj Muhammad became the first United States Olympian in any sport to compete at the Games while wearing a hijab. Muhammad won her first match before losing the first round of 16. In field hockey this morning, having already defeated Argentina, the number 2 ranked team in the world, the United States women's field hockey team did it again, beating Australia, who is ranked number 3. Both victories, they won by a score of 2-1. In more swimming tonight, the first-time Olympian Lily King heads into the 100-meter breaststroke as one of only 2 American women, guess who, Katie Ledecky is the other, to enter the Games with the world's top time in an event this year. The American men have won the last 5 gold medals in the 100-meter backstroke, but the Australian Mitch Larkin is expected to win. In gymnastics, the American men have an outside shot at the medal, but Japan and China are favored to win the gold. That takes place at 3 p.m. And tonight at 6 p.m., the United States men's basketball team takes on Venezuela.
Man, you know what, Seth? I was watching a little bit of the men and women Olympic basketball teams, and I'm sitting there saying, man, I almost fell asleep. Talk about falling asleep. I almost fell asleep watching that. I mean, the women set a record when it comes to just margin of victory in the first round, and the Olympic men have just demolished. I believe they played China, right?
Yep.
They played China, and it was just, it wasn't even close.
57, I think. 57-point win.
I mean, who wants to watch that? I mean, come on.
Can't
I mean,
be entertaining.
Just a complete blowout. Also want to note, I mean, again, as you mentioned, the women's gymnastics team, you know, qualifying from the finals, it was very cool just to see Gabby Douglas, Allie Raisman back out there. Also, Simone Biles will go down as the greatest gymnast ever. I mean, and it's crazy because a lot of people don't know about Simone. So I got into a few arguments when I sent out a tweet, you know, Simone Biles equals the greatest gymnast ever. I got a lot of backlash for that because a lot of people haven't heard her name before. And if you look at, you know, do your research, folks. If you look at her world championships, no other gymnast in the history of the sport has as many accomplishments as Simone does. And I think she'll win at least, she has the opportunity to win 5. She'll win at least 3 gold medals. And if you saw them last night, I mean, they totally, I mean, the next close country was like
9 or 10 seconds away.
Ten points away. Just a complete blowout.
Unreal.
I mean, it was something like to the equivalent of blowing out someone on a basketball court, like 100-0. All right. It was that big. So looking forward to seeing also how Michael Phelps does as he continues his Olympic dominance. So thanks so much for that, Seth. All right. Well, we are out of time for today's Current Sports with me, Al Martin, right here on WKAR AM 870 East Lansing. We'll be back at it on tomorrow's show with wall-to-wall coverage from this afternoon's Michigan State Football Media Day. That and more. We'll see you tomorrow. And be easy, folks.